Now, the probably the big one, item 7.9, page 41, this deals with the Dimmy site and the biggest site around consolidation of the current seven lots. They're back to four, and take it that council will, the Dimmy's building, in fact, is lot four out of that group of the new lot, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. In some respects, this is a straightforward subdivision. However, most importantly, it does create Dimmy's lot as a standalone lot, and council have course is in the process of purchasing that. It rearranges some of the existing lots. The only reason it came to council, actually, normally it would have been issued under delegation, was that council is an interested party, yes, in being a prospective purchaser. But most importantly, it obviously does facilitate the office accommodation project. As has been commented on often, council's been looking at this for 15 years, and this is by far the most cost-effective option compared to a number of the other schemes which have been put forward. So, yes, this does create the lot. The purchase can proceed, the design is being undertaken, and the project can move on. But yes, I think we're quite pleased that this is very cost efficient, more cost efficient than any other option, and it's something desperately needed and something which as council has tried to solve for over 15 years.
Okay, just a couple of questions if I could please, Bernard. So it does formalise the $6 million loan as part of the overall means of purchasing the building. The question, lot four, is that just the building perimeter?
From what I can recall, yes, lot four. And note too, this report didn't relate to the loan or the funding. This simply related to the subdivision of the land.
Okay, so the building perimeter, one would think you'd normally have a perimeter round for maintenance and so on the building, greater, and parking, of course. So two questions there, council staff parking, well, is the access and so on?
Yes, well, council, in fact, lot four is the Dimmy's lot, but council is also purchasing the car park as well. So council will have full control, in effect, of that whole area. And yes, certainly the parking, or the staff are parking there now. We've looked at the parking requirements, and that there won't be any issues regarding parking.
Right, so the parking area acquired by council is the northern area facing Bourke Street.
Well, it is an area between Dimmy's and Bourke Street, and an area to the east of Dimmy's as well. So
right,
there's okay. Quite a very large area of land.
Okay, so there is a perimeter which council is in control of.
Yes.
So then it would, I gather, become a public car park.
Well, it will. It for all intents and purposes, it's a public car park now, and it will remain a public car park.
Right,
absolutely.
Okay. And pedestrian access, Bernard, is it too early to cover that one?
Well, there'll continue to be access across the car park. Some of the preliminary car park design certainly does provide for public access, but that public access is there now. People park in the car park, they walk down to Grey Street, so that full and unencumbered public access will continue.
Okay. Thank you, Bernard. That covers the big issue. The other matters, there's a couple of notices of motion, and I think Margot would like to, indication is that they were not successful, but relating to Gabidi Weir settlement and the Life Choices activity. So, Margot, would you like to comment on what Council's current direction is in regard to those matters?
Yes, the notice of motion around Gabidi Weir settlement removal didn't pass Council, but council are already looking at an integrated water cycle management plan, which is nearing completion. So what we are doing as part of that plan is looking at the whole picture, not just one part of it. So that's the appropriate evidence-based way of going about it. It's important that things happen in the right order. And when there's works and work already underway in regard to our water management more holistically, it's important that we don't pick just one element and look at that in isolation. So Gabidi Weir will be informed by that strategy, and then we can start to look at specific problems that may come to light as a part of that wider integrated water cycle management plan. The other one was around Life Choices, and it's Life Choices has been a focus for council for quite some time. Historically, the Life Choices support services has really been viewed as a community service. Originally, I think at least 20 years ago, it was as a response to market failure or thin market in regional communities, and it's existed ever since. In the last 18 months, certainly early on in the term, Life Choices, we had a workshop on Life Choices, and there was a fairly big review on it, and a lot of things uncovered due to the skill and experience of the manager who oversees life choices and manages that area. So the focus and the target has been to implement all those review recommendations. There's also a lot going on out there in regard to NDIS, so we do really need to understand the impacts of all of those changes. If you've heard out in the news, you're hearing that there's reviews, there's a lot of talk around NDIS. So the next step, really, the next appropriate step is to come back to another workshop. The goal has been for quite some time to get it to break even, and we're certainly working towards that. There's been a lot of regulatory changes, so the next workshop will really give all councillors an understanding of where that is at, and also consideration for whether, you know, it continues to operate as a community service where we either make a loss or we break even, or whether it needs to move into more of a business unit where we need to be aiming to make money out of it. And this is, you know, take this step by step, because it's an important service that a lot of community members rely on, and a lot of those community members are vulnerable and they get worried when we start talking about life choices because they rely on that service. So I want to make it clear to the community that council is just looking at this to try and make it wash its own face at the moment, to make sure we continue on with that service, and there's no threat to that at the moment. But we do need to make sure with all community services that we provide that we are balancing the books at the end of the day across the whole portfolio. So there has already been focus on life choices. There will be a continued focus on how it operates, and there's certainly been some dramatic improvement in that space. And so the next step is to have another workshop, and all the current councillors will be obviously going to that workshop, whereas the early workshops that we had, not all of the current councillors were actually elected at that point of time. So it's really important that we don't duplicate work for the staff. There's already things in motion. There's already a lot of work being done. And so that sort of set up, I guess.
And of course, one big one, an update advice just this morning on the hospital development. And the question, I guess, is, has there been any advice coming through at stage two being a full development?
Yeah, thank you, David. And look, the hospital is a central asset to our community. It's important that it keeps pace in the way that it functions, in the services that it offers. Certainly, the original master plan was much broader and potentially provided additional services. When the master plan was going through and it was getting funded by state government, obviously it was pulled back to a redevelopment of certain parts of the hospital. So at the moment, it's great that, yes, there is investment and a lot of it that is going into this redevelopment. But at the moment, if there's any criticism, it's that it's not actually helping provide any additional services. And so I've been advocating, and I've actually last week sent another letter through to the Minister for Health, and outlining that it's great that, you know, the redevelopment is underway, but we are disappointed isn't more services for our community. Dialysis is one, pediatric services is another that we really need. So my advocacy is around, okay, well, when's the rest of it going to be funded? And what additional services will that then provide the community? So I have asked those questions, and certainly have the support of our state member, Brendan Moylan, in that advocacy. So we'll wait to hear back from that, but rest assured the community that we are continuing to advocate for the full master plan to be funded. We don't know when that's going to be, but that's the question we're asking.
Okay, thank you for that update, Margot. I think it's certainly the kind of information people want to hear in regard to overall health systems. It's great that we've got a new ambulance station.
And the new CT scanning facility has opened its doors as well and seen more than 100 mm-hmm. people so far. And we went there the other day, and we'll have a media release out on this today as well. But it was good to talk to the new owner there, because obviously this was enabled by council selling the front third of the essential, what's known as the essential energy building. It's not just about travel. Some people even if they got a referral for a CT scan, there's just no way they can travel to anywhere else. So what that means is better health outcomes, because people can walk to the scanning facility, get the scan that they need, and then obviously work with their doctor to improve their health. So I think we can't underestimate the impact of having such a facility here in Glen Innes. And council's role was enabling, and we're lucky that a member of our community wanted to start and run this business in our town.
That's great.
Yeah, look, I think just to emphasise the point, it's very easy to underestimate the enormous impact of that facility. Over 150 people in, it's only been open a very short period of time, have been able to access it. They haven't had to spend money and time travelling, and it's I think it's quite remarkable in terms of, it's the biggest step forward in health facilities Glen Innes has seen for a long time.
So yeah, that anything that brings these services closer to the people has got to be a great advantage.
It's good news. It's really good news.
Okay, now the other one, the final one I think that we've got to cover, is the annual Celtic Festival getting underway on Friday.
Yes.
Margot, some updates there?
It's always an exciting time of year when the Celtic Festival is on, and this year it's the Year of Scotland, which is always the biggest year. As some people probably know, it rotates on a three-year cycle. So a couple of exciting things is we do this year have the Mayor of Mossman and a couple of her senior executives coming to Glen Innes. So for those who don't know, Mossman are actually our kind of like a sister city. It's not a formal sister city agreement, but it is a friendship agreement. And it's been a number of years since the Mossman Mayor has attended the Australian Celtic Festival. And so she is coming this year, which I'm delighted to welcome her. I've had also an opportunity to discuss with Mossman how we get more out of that friendship agreement, because there's a number of ways that sister city type agreements can benefit both communities. So that's really exciting, and I just want to remind everyone to buy their tickets. Make sure you make your way up to the Australian Standing Stones. But on Friday down the main street, starting at 10:45, we have the official opening. Brendan Moylan will be joining us for that as well. And so that's always a great way to kick off the festival. And also down the main street on Saturday morning, starting at 9, is the official march and parade. That is an extraordinary atmosphere. I encourage everyone to come out and hear all of the bands, pipe bands, and watch on the march. It is an extraordinary thing to be a part of. It's fantastic.
It draws us to a close.
Thank you,
Margaret,
very much.
And thank you, Bernard.